Welcome to Forward Talks by Gombook, a podcast about moving towards sustainability in the region and beyond. I'm Tatiana Antonelli. Our guest today is Sunil Lalvani, founder of Project Magi, which seeks to bring sustainable access to safe water across rural sub-Saharan Africa with solar-powered water kiosks. They already operate 60 such kiosks and want to provide safe water to 1 million people by 2025. We compared notes on what it is like starting and operating a social enterprise in the region, as well as the overall impact Project Magi is hoping to have on the youth and their quality of life by improving their access to water in their local villages. Sunil's journey started during a visit to Ghana as part of his family's electronics business that operates in Africa, which triggered his journey into starting a social enterprise.
So I actually saw a TED talk by a gentleman called Dan Palotta. And he talked about the new way we should look at charity. And charities or not-for-profit organizations, whatever you want to call them, should be entities that essentially run themselves as businesses, but just don't look to take the profit out. They should certainly be looking to be financially sustainable. They should be looking to make cash surpluses if possible, so they have money for a rainy day. The only difference being that they don't want to take a dividend out and pay it off to shareholders. So I really took 25 years of business experience and applied it to, well, let's call it the charitable world, the NGO world, and that's where I actually, for the first time, learned about this phrase, social enterprise.
And was it easy to start a social enterprise here? What was the process? I mean, we as Gombook are a social enterprise, and I know how difficult it is, and we found our ways. But I would love to know from a businessman, from someone who's really had a specific way to work and look at profit, on how you were able to start a social enterprise. What did you look for, and what helped you?
Again, a very good question. And what helped us really, if I speak very bluntly, was actually the fact that I had my family business, which gave us a lot of back office support in the early days, not only sort of company registration and physical office, but a lot of admin support. You know, the Project Magi team really focused on the hardcore technical aspects of it, was developing the kiosk, deploying the kiosk, working with the village communities. But we didn't have to worry about all the admin, the logistics, the HR, because the family business took care of that in the very early days. And I do have to say that I'm going to say until now, actually, but Dubai has been an expensive place for companies to set up, for startups to set up. To be very clear, because one of the beauties about working here is of course the no tax environment, but of course the government needs revenue, and the government takes its revenue from startup fees, visa fees and things like this. Now, that's very good as you grow, because you pay that one-time fee and you're done for the year. Whatever your profit is, it's tax-free. But it does become a hindrance to any startup, because it's quite a big chunk of cash for a startup to pay up front. So we actually worked under the umbrella of our family business in Dubai, because actually most of our on-the-ground operations are on the African continent. But it's a very interesting question, because now with the whole COVID issue, and I know Dubai is being very agile, as Dubai is famous for, in terms of trying to welcome and help people out of trouble. There are some really good, interesting opportunities in some of the free zones with some new, very affordable options for startups to go. So we are, in fact, for the first time now, looking to register officially in Dubai as a standalone entity to take advantage of some of these really good offers available now.
I hope people now will take notes and hopefully go and check with DED on these opportunities. I know also that for the first time this year, the Dubai Economic Authority is offering the possibility to register as CSR entities. But now let's go back to the amazing Project Magi. So what the project does is helping communities and children to somehow get water, clean water into their homes and not having to commute for hours to find sometimes just a puddle of water. How did this whole thing start?
So as I said, my family business is an electronics business, and it predominantly operates across sub-Saharan Africa. It was actually a day in Ghana in 2014 when I was driving from town to town along a bush road, where in the middle of nowhere, my driver just stopped. I asked him, I said, well, what are we stopping for here? And he said, well, there's a puddle of water in the road, so I can't carry on. But we were in a Jeep, and so I said, well, you know, what's the problem? We've been through many puddles of water before. Why don't you just drive through it? And he very nonchalantly said, well, I can't because there are some kids in the water. And I wanted to understand more. So I got down from the car and in fact, talked to these kids and found they were playing in this water. They were very happy. They were collecting it in buckets. And they were, in fact, even drinking from this water, which I found really quite horrific. And in fact, I found out that they were on their way for their normal 1 or 2 hour walk to collect their daily needs for water. But they had said to me that luckily it had rained the night before and this puddle of water was there, and it was just 100 meters from their village. So they saved this hour walk, which meant they could have time to play in the puddle. And sure enough, they were going to go back with this bucket of water to their village. So I, in fact, decided to go back with them. I wanted to learn more about this. I walked up to the village with them and spoke to some of the elders and the chief in the village, and sure enough found that, yes, this is their daily routine. I speak very honestly, you read about so many issues in the world, and you see documentaries, you see news clippets, but the reality is, for so many of these cases, once you turn the channel, once you turn the page, once you walk out of the room, that case is gone. But this hit me very, very hard, and it was direct. And in fact, I found not only was this the kind of walk that they have to do every day, but they did in fact have a hand pump installed in that village a few years earlier by an NGO. But that hand pump, after being installed, broke down about a year or 2 years later. And the people who installed it never went back to check on it. The people in the village really didn't have the know-how or the funds to fix it. So, and that's why it was something that really touched my heartstrings so much. And I thought, this is a community I really want to help. And when I saw that the hand pump also was the kind of solution that people were using, this antiquated 100-year-old solution, I thought, there has to be a better way. So because we're from an electronics business, we had a solar division within the company. And I gave a couple of my solar engineers the task, can you, in fact, put a solar pump here instead of a hand pump, so that we can get rid of all the manual labor? And about 3 or 4 months later, it was developed, it was installed, and World Water Day 2015, 22nd of March, we turned on the tap, and that was a euphoric occasion for me, for the village, of course, life-changing for them, but it really started my journey down a completely different path.
That was a tipping point for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how does that work? So how can Project Magic be a social enterprise? What is it that you're selling? What can we do to support? Or no, or there's nothing we can do because it's not a charity, as you said.
So in fact, where we are today, so first of all, it was a question of fine-tuning our solution. Our original installations cost about $30,000. We're now down to about $15,000. And my target is to get that down. My moonshot target, if you like, is to get that down to below $5,000, where we can be completely game-changing. And the whole thing about social enterprises is really finding a social issue that one wants to tackle and putting a business model around that and finding out who is the customer. That's also a really critical element in this. And in this case, I guess we have two customers. One is we have the end beneficiary, the village dweller who we do refer to as consumers, because we do charge for the water. One of the things we do when we go and we scope villages, we do make sure that they have affordability for the water. There are definitely certain villages which are really way below the poverty line, and they need donations of water. They won't be able to afford water. I do fully accept that. But the thing about the 800 million people and the water crisis is it's not in many, many cases, it's not about affordability of water. It is purely about access to water. Just nobody has gone in, governments or other organizations have gone in and provided that access. So it was for us to go in and provide that access with decentralized solar-powered kiosks. So they could be sustainable, they could run off-grid, they were going to be zero pollution because of the solar. And because of the revenue generated from the sale of water, that was going to be able to cover all our running and operational costs. And so far, that model is working extremely well. The caveat we have is we still haven't cracked the way to pay for the capital expenditure. So we still rely on donations and partnerships for people to give us a donation for the capital expenditure. But then we run them off the water expenses, or the water revenue. We cover all our operation expenses. But that's why I'm so keen to get our capital expenditure down to below $5,000, because that becomes a tipping point where we can finance it by debt and be completely financially self-sustaining.
On your website, what I notice is that you have a big involvement with the youth. I mean, this is definitely a project that changed the life of the young generations in Kenya and in Ghana. What is your vision for them?
Yeah, supporting the youth is a really key tenet for us. For all the reasons we discussed, if people don't have water, they spend hours walking. So that is straight away time lost, and it's typically kids and women who have to do this. So women can't be working, or they can't even just choose to be full time mums. But kids don't get a chance to go to school, and sometimes they just don't get a chance just even to be kids and just have time to play. So you really save them a lot of time. And if you can save them that time and they can go into school, you really are helping them for the longer term, because they get an education and they can get qualifications and get better jobs in cities and urban areas, etc. Or at least they have the choice of what they want to do. But on top of that, also even just carrying this water, a typical jerry can or a bucket, as they call it in Ghana. 20 liters is 20 kilograms. 20 kilos is a heavy amount. These little kids and women are putting these things on their heads and walking for hours. And Ghana, where I've given the example of 1 or 2 hours, in Kenya, we have situations where they're walking for 7, 8, 9 hours. It is a full day journey, literally, to go and get the water. So this causes all sorts of spinal injuries as well, long-term permanent spinal injuries. So giving people water, yes, you are helping the community immediately, but you're really giving the youth much better long-term benefits. And we've actually shifted a lot of our focus. Kenya's the place where we really started to do this firsthand, is we're actually co-locating our kiosks into schools, which are near to villages. So in fact, we put our kiosk into a school, we give free water access to the school during the school day, but the community nearby is able to come and access the water on a payable basis. So that makes sure that there's funds available to run it and maintain it. But the school kids in the day don't have to waste time in the morning to go collect water. They have it available in their school, so they have drinking water, and they also have good sanitation and hygiene available to them.
So right now, the tool or the technology you're using is powered by solar energy. But what does it do? It is. Do you need to drill? Is it a well? So they need to have underground water. What are the things that are needed in order for you to come in and install this kiosk?
Well, there's one critical thing, which is water. Of course, water has to exist somewhere accessible to us. And accessible to us means primarily, yes, we are using solar pumps to pull up water from wells. But what we are typically doing, because it's been such a problem over decades across the continent, is instead of drilling new wells, we are actually going to villages where there are broken hand pumps, like I saw in that first village, where we can remove the hand pump and there is a perfectly good bore well available for us to use. And that can often, if we had to drill a new borehole, that could cost us $3,000 or $5,000. So it's quite a significant saving. It's about 25% additional cost that we're able to save just by utilizing an existing borehole. So yes, we need a source of water as a borehole, but we have also now fine-tuned our technology that we can pump from nearby rivers, because certainly in some of the areas we work in Ghana, the you know, never has a truer word been spoken than water, water everywhere, not a drop to drink. A lot of these villages are right on the shoreline of the river. So they have enough water there. But the river is hugely polluted by some illegal mining and also by a parasite called schistosomiasis or bilharzia. If the village people go into that water, it gets into their skin and it causes all sorts of terrible problems. So we have found a way that we can now pump from that river, which is just not even 100 meters away, but we've developed a filtration solution that will take care of the schistosomiasis snail and deliver them clean drinking water.
This is amazing. I mean, you are not only into access to water, but kind of sanitation as well.
Well, it's very key to us. There are very key phrases. It's a very key phrase that we have. It's very specific wording that our goal is to provide sustainable access to safe water to communities. Sustainable is a key word in that sentence, and safe water is a key word in that sentence.
Are you getting any support from the local governments? How do they see you coming in and helping so much communities? Are they not willing to support, or at least in infrastructure, or partially kind of subsidies? How does that work?
Shall I say no, and no? That's going a bit too harsh. No. So we typically work in Ghana and Kenya. At the moment, we're looking to expand to some other countries very, very soon. Where governments, let's say, will not support us is on finances. So we do have to go and get our own finances to run the operation. But where they do support and they do deserve full credit. So I said the first comment lightheartedly. Was in fact in giving us proper access to the villages. They do actually make sure that the red tape is cleared. We've got the permission. They take us into the villages. They facilitate the meetings with the local communities and the local chiefs. So they make sure that we can enter the area as well, that we can operate extremely efficiently. So they clear the path for us. So they do all that they can. Short of financing, and that's fine, because I know a lot of these governments, they have a lot of needs for their money. I'd like to say that water should be a big priority, but okay, they've got to allocate it in all sorts of areas. So we can find that area. We can help them support on the finance side, but they need to help on the ground, and they do.
So if we look instead at the private sector, do you have support from corporates? I know, I mean, you're based in Dubai. I saw you have an impressive board of trustees and directors. But locally, do you have companies and businesses willing to support you?
So corporates and family offices are actually where we get a huge amount of support. We work, and in fact, with some well-known NGOs. So we work with World Vision. We work with the International Federation of Red Cross. Big supporters of ours. We work with some very large corporates who give us sponsorship and help us along with our growth. We also work with some good personalities. So there's a famous basketball player in the US, Kyrie Irving. For the NBA fans out there, he's a fantastic supporter of us. Manal Rostam is an influencer locally in Dubai. She's the spokeswoman for Nike and the sporting hijabi revolution. So she's a great ambassador for us. And we have been recognized by the local government here as well, because we worked with Red Crescent in Dubai and the Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum Sukhia Water Aid Award. We won that award, and a financial donation with that came along at the beginning of this year. So we do actually get a lot of support from a lot of areas, corporates, governments, NGOs, because I think a lot of people like not only, of course, the cause that we're serving, but the methodology that we're taking around it.
I would like to ask you, it's interesting to know that you have so much support from the private sector as well. And I know that some of these funds might also come maybe from CSR budgets. And usually companies also like to be involved somehow
with their own employees. Is this something that is doable? Could companies, for example, come and help install this kiosk or do some other work with the communities in parallel to what you're doing and support your work?
Yes, indeed, it's a very good question. So it's something we've been looking at, and we were in fact about to do something earlier this year, but of course coronavirus put a stop to a lot of activities. But we are we're very clear that we have to find commercial routes for financing. So when we take commercial sponsorship, our kiosks do have a good space on them for brand logos, and we're quite happy with that. If a brand wants to sponsor us and get the recognition for it, well, absolutely they should. But on top of that, to get a good feeling internally, so Apparel Group in the UAE is a great supporter of ours, and then we're trying to work out with all the other companies we work with if there can be trips out to Ghana or Kenya to come and see. Not so much in the building of the kiosk, because one of the beautiful things about the design we've made is that our kiosks are actually up and running within a day. All the work beforehand, prepping, training the community about why interviewing them first, getting a pre-impact survey, installing the kiosk. After it's installed, we give them training about why they should be drinking clean water, how they should be washing their hands, etc. That all takes a lot of time, and that's where we try to get some corporates and NGOs, and even some. We've had some school trips with kids come out to educate them. But the actual building itself, ironically, just takes a day, and there's not a lot that people can help with that because our team takes two people and not a lot of time.
What can we do? What would you like us to do in general as in the UAE as a population?
Look, one very, very critical thing is I think we live such blessed lives in the communities we are in. And one thing is to value water and value all the resources around us and the environment. Because, you know, I've seen how hard it is for people to get water. We turn on a tap and we'll brush our teeth and leave the water running or have, you know, a 30-minute shower and the water is running. And I know it's lovely and it's warm water and it's comfortable and luxurious, or cold water in a summer Dubai. But when you see how precious every liter of water is to some of these people, please preserve it, because the water resource we have in the world is not going to last us forever. The UAE uses a lot of desalination to get the water. That is expensive, and that has its own long-term environmental impacts. It is really important that we value the resource that we have. And we've seen some cities like Cape Town, for example. South Africa's run out of water already. Cities in India are going to run out of water. So let's really value it. And the other thing is the water crisis that we're trying to address, access to water for communities, is a solvable problem in our lifetimes. And our lifetimes means in the next 5 to 10 years. This is not a technical problem. This is a financial problem. We have the technology to do it. We just need the money. And organizations like ours can do this. There are many, many worthwhile water organizations doing work like us. If you want to support, all of us will welcome the help that we can get. But it changes lives dramatically. Giving access to water changes lives dramatically.
You can find more information about Project Magi at their website. That's projectmagi.com, where you can find links to donate if you're able to support their efforts. As always, we'd love to connect with you. You can find us on Instagram at Goombook. That's GOUMBOOK. And all of our episodes at our website, goombook.com/podcast. See you next week. Thank you.